Welcome to your weekly constitutional radio show about the Constitution, produced in partnership with the home of the Constitution, James Madison's Montpelier. My name is Stuart Harris, and I teach constitutional law at the Appalachian School of Law in beautiful Grundy, Virginia, and I'm speaking to you today from the studios of WETS HD1 and WETS 89.5 FM in Johnson City, Tennessee. Well, it may be cold outside, it may be dark, it may be a typical January day, so I thought this was a good time for a reminder of summer. I'm thinking back to a warm, late summer day in September. I was at a party, I was walking around, I was meeting people, I was eating food and drinking beer, and it was a celebration. It was a celebration of one of our favorite days of the year at Montpelier. Of course, I'm speaking of September 17th, Constitution Day. I was at Montpelier, and now you get to come with me as I walk around, accompanied by my son, Benjamin, and you'll get to meet the people we meet, and you'll get to hear the things that we hear, and we're just going to have ourselves a celebration of the United States Constitution. Now, the very first people we came across after we'd left the Visitor Center at Montpelier were a bunch of lovely young ladies singing songs. Well, of course, I had to know who were these young women, so I took a moment and spoke with them.
I'm here with a group called Harmonia.
We're Armonia.
Armonia without the H. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that named after the harmonica?
No.
Okay. Okay, I just thought I'd ask. Okay, well, why don't you tell me your names and tell me about your group?
Well, I'm Meredith. I'm the vice president of the group, mm-hmm. and we do colonial reenactments and do a lot of Project Enlightenment stuff. And we go around to local events and sing for people.
And today you're here at Constitution Day at Montpelier.
Mm-hmm.
And you came all the way down from McLean, Virginia for that.
Yes.
How long did it take y'all to get down here?
About 2 hours.
2 hours. 2 hours.
Great.
That was an interesting challenge. 2 hours. In a cramped car.
Yeah, all together.
So a colonial singing group. That seems to be a sort of an unusual thing for a high school group to do.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Dressed up.
We enjoy it.
I see. Well, thank you very much for letting me record you, and I wish you a very happy Constitution Day.
Thank you for your time.
Well, that's intriguing. A group of people, a group of high school students who are Enlightenment reenactors. I don't know about you, but that's the first such group I've ever encountered. And I'm going to give you a little foreshadowing here. I kept running into them as I walked around the grounds. It was a great mystery. Who were these people, and why were they doing this? Well, in the meantime, the next group of people I came up to, where there was actually just a couple. It was a very important couple at Montpelier. It was, in fact, James and Dolly Madison themselves.
Well, I think it is appropriate in the course of a year to, on several occasions, reflect upon that document which conjoins the various political electorate from New Hampshire and the upper reaches of Massachusetts all the way to Georgia and the west beyond the Mississippi. The one document that conjoins everyone together in a political unity, and from time to time to engage in that examination of the Constitution which so unites the country just now, and this would be an appropriate day to do so.
Indeed it is, sir. And Mrs. Madison, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I think that if I were to choose a day to celebrate the Constitution, certainly the day that it was signed on September 17th would be an admirable day to do it. But we must not forget that this Constitution had to be ratified by 9 states. And until it was ratified, it could not really be called the Constitution of the United States.
That is true. So in a sense, Constitution Day is a bit premature in a sense. It's a celebration of the original 7 articles, but not the rest of it.
That's right. It's not a celebration of the day that it became our Constitution. It is a celebration of those men who first formed it.
Ah, well said. Well said indeed.
There have been, in the intervening time, 12 amendments added to the Constitution, and I believe that they should be as celebrated as the original document itself. We cannot reflect upon a document without considering the amendments that have been made to it by the wisdom, collective wisdom, of the people at large.
Agreed. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about those first 10 with which you had to do such a great deal.
Well, in truth, there were 12 amendments proposed that I advocated the consideration of amendments. The process of ratification, as you know, was a difficult one and ended with many states ratifying the Constitution with proposed amendments. It was my ambition to prevent a second convention from taking place, but rather to take up the question of amendments in the first Congress. Some difficulty, we endeavored to begin that process in May of 1789, a month after the convention, convening of the House of Representatives and the Senate. But it took until the following August before we could get the House to address the whole matter of the amendments. There are 12 amendments proposed. The first two were sent to the several states, as were the last 10. But the first two amendments were not ratified by the several states, but sufficient numbers of states ratifying. And so the 3rd through the 12th amendment proposed became the first through 10 amendments. Subsequently, we added the 11th amendment and 12th amendment. 11th amendment to reinforce the decision in Chisholm versus Georgia in 1795-96, and the 12th amendment allowing for an alteration in the choosing of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And but they all become celebrated additions and alterations and clarifications in the operation of the government we call the United States government.
I don't want to take up all of your time here. I see there are others waiting to speak to you. Would you mind if we took a photograph or two?
I'm not sure what that is. Well, last name is Harris, I understand.
That's correct.
Are you related to Levitt Harris? He's our chargé d'affaires in the Court of St. Petersburg.
I'm sure there's some relation, distant as it might be. If you'd look at the young man there with that strange device, I think perhaps...
Young Benjamin. Yes, indeed.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Madison. We appreciate it.
It's our pleasure.
By the way, I apologize for the wind noise over the microphone. It was a very windy morning that day. In fact, it was so windy that James and Dolly almost didn't get to go up for their hot air balloon ride. But if you visited our Facebook page, you've already seen the picture of them in the hot air balloon. So eventually things calmed down. In fact, they calmed down for my next interview with Julie Reed.
Okay, I'm here with Julie Reed, whose name tag tells me she's the tourism coordinator at Montpelier here on Constitution Day. So, Julie, tell me who you are and what you do.
I work with just about anybody that wants to come visit Montpelier. Mm-hmm. I work with adult groups, student groups. I work with all of our tourism partners, chambers, hotels, bed and breakfasts.
Can I help?
Just anybody in the region. Also, I go to tourism conventions and shows, try to promote Montpelier as a wonderful learning and teaching opportunity for visitors. So I try to be a good ambassador.
And so this is probably the biggest day of the year for you, isn't it?
It's one of the biggest, for sure.
Uh-huh. And were you in charge of putting all this great stuff together?
Oh, my goodness, no. No,
oh,
no,
okay.
No.
Okay.
I just help out where I can.
I understand. What's your favorite Montpelier experience?
Every time I go through the mansion, I learn something new, not only by just observing the furnishings, the artwork, but our guides are just wonderful, and they're so knowledgeable, and I learn something new every day.
They are tremendous. I will agree with you very much. In fact, we're about to walk through the mansion again, so we'll take you up on that.
Good.
Thank you very much, Julie.
Thank you so much, Stuart.
After I spoke with Julie, my eyes fell upon something that just drew me in. It was, of course, Montpelier's tool tent.
All right, I'm here with Melissa Kerr in the tool tent on Constitution Day 2012. So tell me, Melissa, about the tool tent.
We are in the area where Madison's stables and workshops would have stood. Those buildings are gone, but we have located the tool tent in the area where it would be. And we provide a variety of woodworking, blacksmithing, and brick making tools so people can get a grasp on how things worked back then in the days before electricity.
Yes, and it was a rather difficult process then, wasn't it?
A whole lot of labor. A whole lot of labor goes into everything. No matter how simple you think it might be, there's a lot of human muscle behind it.
What sort of stuff did they do? And I mean, did they manufacture their own tools?
Yeah, they made tools. Nails or there what? Was an extensive blacksmithing operation here that many years made more money than the tobacco or the wheat crops.
Oh, so they would make stuff here to sell.
It was essential. The blacksmithing job here was essential to the prosperity of the plantation, and they would make things that they would sell to the entire surrounding countryside, because this was very much a frontier town, and there weren't really a whole lot of places where you could buy tools. So Madison's father stepped in, saw an opportunity, created the blacksmithing works, and ended up selling for miles around.
Great. Well, could you show me a couple of the tools here?
We've got an andiron that Garnett is my colleague there, she's working with. It's the andiron, the tongs, as you see, and she's got the hammer. And we try to provide here for kids their aluminum cans, just soda cans, as well as the pieces of copper that you can see her working with right now, because those are soft metals. Right. So they can experience what it's like to heft the weight of the hammer, to drop it. If you know what you're doing, you let the hammer bounce and pop up again, and that saves you the effort of lifting it up. That's a blacksmith's trick. So they can try that and feel how that would save them some effort. And then we've got the grindstone right next to it, again, to show them how copper sharpens easily, to show them how that process works.
Well, how does one become the person in charge of the tool tent at James Madison's Montpelier?
It is part of the education department, and myself and Garnett, who are out here today, we are museum educators, and we staff the tool tent. We also do the kitchen demonstrations that are on the other end of the house, and we take school groups here through here and do educational programs for them.
Very cool. Anything else you care to tell me?
We've got a wonderful shaving horse and draw knife over there, which is one of the most relaxing and enjoyable tools I've ever used.
Let's go over and take a look at the shaving horse. This is to shave down pieces of wood.
Yeah, whatever you have that needs to be made smooth, this is where you're going to start. And we don't have the knife. Let me grab it real quick.
Okay. I'm reading from the sign here. It says shaving horse and draw knife. The draw knife was used in combination with the shaving horse to finish rough-hewn wooden objects. Pegs, tools, handles, shingles, and lath could all be shaped and shaved smooth with the draw knife. And that's what you now have in your hand, is the draw knife.
I have the knife in my hand. Basically, the shaving horse is the same principle as a metal vise that you're going to have screwed to your work table. It's just bigger. And you're using the weight of your foot to hold it down. So you've got the plank to sit on, and then underneath is a pedal. You put your weight on that and clamp down on whatever you're smoothing, like this.
Okay.
It's nice and secure now. It's
right.
Nice and tight. This can go up and down. It's adjustable. And then you're just going to do this repeated motion of carefully,
great,
slowly making it smooth.
I'm going to speak to my son, Ben, who's here with us. Ben, can you take a video of this for the Facebook page? Tremendous. Ben's got his fancy iPhone with him, and he's going to take a video of you, if that's all right.
That's absolutely fine.
Okay, and perhaps we can post that to our Facebook page here.
That would be great.
All righty, you ready, Ben? Okay, here we go.
So I'm going to repeat this motion. I should be wearing a leather apron. I'm not. I'm cheating a little bit. But you got to control your motion, or you can see what could happen, how this could easily become a disaster.
Yes, I'm actually, you have a sharp edge that keeps coming back at you. So I can see, okay, safety issue there.
Especially if you're working with a wood that has a lot of knots, like cedar does, because you get your knife behind the knot, all of a sudden it's jumping out of there when you pull it.
I see.
So you really have to concentrate on this task.
You can't just plug this in.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope, it's all the power of the bicep and the rest
of the
arm.
I see. Well, you must be in very good shape then.
Well, it is good exercise out here, that's for sure.
Well, thank you very much, Melissa Kerr. I appreciate your time.
A pleasure. Okay. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you. We will. After Ben and I finished at the tool tent, we decided we'd head over toward the archaeology lab, which is sort of on the other side of the property, or at least the other side of the mansion. But along the way, we ran into a couple of old friends.
All right, it's Constitution Day 2012, and I'm here with Anne O'Brien. Yes, and Doug Smith, the Executive Director for the Center of the Constitution and the Vice President for Advancement.
Very good, Stuart.
Of all of Montpelier, he has many, many titles. And we've heard from Doug on several occasions, and feel free to chime in, Doug, but right now I'm going to ask Anne O'Brien, who is the wife of Sean O'Brien, who is the interim president, right?
That's a nice short way to put it.
Okay, very good. But you also have something else you're doing here on Constitution Day.
This is my second Constitution Day, and that this time my band is going to play.
What's the band called?
The band is called, at the moment, Anne O'Brien and Her Checkered Past.
Anne O'Brien and Her Checkered Past. That's one of the better names I've ever heard.
That's a little bit silly, if you know me. But okay. That's all right.
Now I'm just starting to wonder. Okay, now I want to hear about you. Tell me about this band and what you're going to do with it today.
The band consists of today, my neighbor and good friend, also history professor, Liz Varin.
History professor where?
At the University of Virginia.
Oh, right down the road.
That's right. And my brother-in-law, Charlie O'Brien, who has recently picked up the bass just to help me out.
I see.
That's right. So,
what sort of music are you going to play?
We're going to play songs from my record that I just finished last year. And
what's the name of the record?
The record is called "The Girl I Left Behind."
The Girl I Left Behind.
That's a traditional tune that all fiddle players know. I ended up turning it into an actual song that had nothing to do with the original lyrics, but.
That sounds intriguing.
I have a big...
And where's the CD available?
It is available probably in my backpack.
Well, that's important, but thinking for people listening, where can
that's
they get
right.
it?
That's right. They can go on cdbaby.com.
cdbaby.com.
They can look on Anne O'Brien Music / Facebook, and they can go to my obscure website, www.piratecat.com.
Piratecat.com.
Yes.
Okay, very interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Are you?
Okay, and so you're going to play today. You and your checkered past
That's
are going to get
right.
up on stage, and what
That's
sort of
right.
music are you going to play?
Like I said, I'm going to play my original songs and some good old stuff. Just an example, we're going to do a Bob Dylan song and a Van Morrison song along with my stuff. So we have electric guitar today, bass, and my acoustic guitar.
This sounds great.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. It should be fun.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Now, Doug.
Yes, sir.
What have you got to say for yourself today on Constitution Day? What are you up to?
Stuart, it's great to see you. I'm really glad that you came here to Montpelier for Constitution Day. I tell you, it's a fantastic day. As Anne O'Brien was telling you, we've got a series of fantastic bands. The capstone band is going to be the Navy Jazz Band.
Right.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
In fact, you've got a big big stage you've erected out on the front lawn there for them. That's going to be very impressive.
Absolutely. We don't do a whole lot on the front lawn very often, James Madison's front lawn, but on days like today when we're celebrating the 225th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution,
yes.
Really, really big, it's great. You know, Montpelier is where America celebrates the Constitution, and we're expecting thousands of people today.
And they're already here, in fact. There's a big crowd, and we were just over at the Visitor Center, and the weather is cooperating perfectly. I think it's about one of the nicest days I've ever experienced here.
It's, as one once said, Montpelier is just a squirrel's leap from heaven.
I think I've heard that someplace. All right. Thanks, Doug. Thanks, Anne. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Well, I don't know about you, but after I spoke with Anne, I was just eager to hear her band, Anne O'Brien and Her Checkered Past. So I head out over to the front of Montpelier, and before long, she and her band had set up on the front steps.
This is Anne O'Brien and Her Checkered Past, playing on the front steps of Montpelier.
Oh,
And it's no surprise that among the listeners to Anne O'Brien and her checkered past was Sean O'Brien, Anne's husband.
Sean O'Brien, the interim president of Montpelier, is now whistling for his wife.
Yes.
Who is performing Anne and her checkered past.
Yes.
Performing.
They are performing on the steps of, or in the front portico of James Madison's Montpelier to celebrate Constitution Day.
Absolutely.
Constitution Day is a big day in Montpelier, obviously. James Madison, father of the Constitution. We like to think of the 4th of July as the day that we said to the world, we are a country, hear us roar. But Constitution Day is the day we said what kind of country we were going to be.
Right.
And that's the day the rest of the world had to take notice. And that day changed the world. Because now most of the world is democratic, and most countries have constitutions.
And many of them are patterned after ours.
Indeed they are.
Indeed they are. Well, this is a fantastic
day. We're having a big festival here today. This is our second annual Constitution Day celebration.
I didn't realize this was only the second one.
We have celebrated Constitution Day in the past, but this is the second time we've made it into a festival and a sort of a fair with hot air balloons and musical acts and fireworks after dark. It's really becoming an all-day activity here at Montpelier.
It is, and families are showing up, and they're just hanging out, and many of them are spreading out blankets hours beforehand because they want to get the best spots for the fireworks.
Absolutely. So you look at the music until sun sets, and you turn around, and you'll see fireworks over the mountains. It's going to be a fantastic night.
Absolutely fantastic, Sean. Well, thanks very much. I appreciate your
time.
My
pleasure. Okay.
It's your weekly Constitutional, and it's not January. No, we're back in the summer. Late summer, a celebration at Montpelier for Constitution Day. After the break, we'll come back and we'll continue on with our walk around Montpelier. Stay tuned. Well, after our brief digression with Anne O'Brien and Doug Smith and Sean O'Brien, and after listening to Anne O'Brien and her checkered past, Ben and I finally made it to Montpelier's archaeology lab.
I'm Erica, and I'm a laboratory technician here at Montpelier, and I work helping in the lab, processing the artifacts, processing the soil samples that the field crew brings in. So basically, we have a bunch of different processes that we use in the lab in order to recover artifacts and to learn more about the history of Montpelier during the James Madison occupation and afterwards, and during the different, right now we're working on the site is a slave quarter site.
Right. What sort of stuff are you finding?
I'm working on the north block of the site, and I'm cataloging metal right now, so they're finding a lot of bone. I know they're out on the south site. We haven't gotten that far yet in the lab. It takes a lot longer to process materials in the lab than it does to recover them in the field. So we're a little bit backlogged, but not too badly. They're recovering things like ceramics, glass, bone, iron, metal, nails. We've actually found parts of a threshing machine.
Oh, cool.
That we've been kind of trying to reconstruct. We're keeping all the parts separate.
Right.
So that we can see how they fit back together.
No, is this the entirety of your artifact collection? I'm looking around.
No, it's not. Oh, okay. We do have another storage building on site that we bring the artifacts to when we are completely done with them.
So these are just the ones you're processing or recently processed?
Yeah, what we're working on is actually along this wall right here.
Right.
So.
And there's a lot of stuff here. There are boxes and there are big plastic bags full of items as well. Yeah. What's the coolest thing you've seen here so far?
I don't know. I like
pirate
the small
treasure.
Finds. No pirate.
No
treasure.
Pirate treasure.
I like the small finds, little buttons, beads that we find. Just they're more connected to the people who actually use them. Everything reflects some sort of human use or behavior. I don't know. I just really like the little clothing artifacts. Somebody bought that. Somebody wore that. I haven't been here very long, so I haven't seen a whole lot. Ceramics.
What's your background? How does one become an archaeology lab technician?
My background's in history. That's what I did my undergraduate work in.
Where was that?
At Ramapo College. It's in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
So I did an internship at the Mahwah Museum in archaeology during my senior year there and decided that that was the direction I was going to go in. I did a field school the following summer down at Poplar Forest. So that's
Jefferson
sort of,
Summer Home.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So that sort of kind of introduced me to Mid-Atlantic Virginia.
So that's how a Jersey girl comes down here.
Well, I took a stop in Michigan first.
Where in Michigan?
That's at Kalamazoo. That's where I did my graduate work.
Uh-huh.
So I'm still there.
Where, Grand Valley? Or?
No, Western Michigan.
Michigan, right, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm 2 years in, and I've got a thesis to finish.
I see you're going to get a PhD?
I don't know. Uh-huh. We'll see. I'm working on the MA first.
Understood.
Then getting some more work experience before I think about doing that.
I see. Springsteen's coming to Charlottesville next month. Are you going?
Not currently, but
the Jersey girl who's turning her back on the boss. I don't know.
That's definitely something to think about.
Definitely something to think about. Well, I hope you can make it up for the concert. Yeah. Lyrica?
Erica, yeah.
I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm.
On our way out of the archaeology lab, Ben and I came across a family that was clustered around a box that looked like your regular everyday sandbox, but it was actually a special sandbox. It was the archaeology sandbox.
I'm Steve Schultz, and I'm here with my family, my wife Stacy, my son Isaac, and my daughter Paige, and our dog Ivy.
You even brought the dog.
We brought the dog.
I see.
She's a member of the family now, so we wanted to show her Mount Pelier as well.
Right. Well, I hear an engine coming up. I guess there's some sort of hayride going on for tourists.
Yes, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, I think so. I see a big wagon load of tourists going in. Well, tell me about your experiences, though.
So far, so good. We've been able to see a little bit of the house from the outside. Got down to see some of the smokehouses. Saw some of the role players who were in authentic garb. Of course, now we're here digging in the dirt, finding some artifacts that date back to probably James Madison's day and trying to figure out what they are and having a good time doing it.
Well, now, who are you and what have you found? You gonna come tell me?
I'm Paige.
You're Paige? Okay. And what have you found, Paige?
I don't know.
Well, what does it look like? It looks like a big piece of metal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of it straight and part of it has sort of a circle on it. What do you think that could be? Your hands are getting awfully dirty. Are you enjoying that? I see. And who's this other fellow with you?
Isaac.
Hello, Isaac. What have you got, Isaac?
I don't know. It's a piece of rock.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what kind of rock.
It looks kind of like an orange rock to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it could be important?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been digging over here in this box?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, did you find any treasure?
Mm-hmm.
You did?
Not. I found this.
What is that?
A horseshoe.
But where's the horse?
It's just a horseshoe.
It's just a horseshoe. Okay, very important. Okay, well, you let me know if you find anything really important, all right, Isaac?
My sister found this.
Oh, okay. That looks like a big bracket of some kind.
Yeah.
Well, that's how it really works, isn't it? You have all these old things that people leave behind, and we come back later and dig them up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Isaac, and thank you, Paige. We appreciate it, and thank you, Mom and Dad, as well.
You're welcome.
After we finished at the archaeology lab, we walked over to the mansion. We were thinking maybe we might take a tour. It had been a while since I'd been inside, but I'll tell you what, the lines were just getting really impossibly long. But the one place where we could get in quickly was the basement, and it occurred to me I'd never been down there. So next, we went into Dolly Madison's kitchen.
What's your name?
Ireland.
Ireland, and what are you doing here in Dolly Madison's kitchen?
Playing.
Playing with what?
A tea set.
A tea set. Very nice. You having a good time?
Yeah.
Tremendous. Where did you come from? Where are you from?
Virginia.
Virginia. Do you know what town you're from in Virginia?
I don't know.
Okay, did you drive a long way to get here?
Yes.
I see.
You have to get here 3 times. You have to drive here to 3 roads.
3 different roads. Okay. Well, that sounds like a long trip. Okay. Are you having a good time?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for telling me that.
Welcome.
Okay. Can I talk to your mom now? Okay, Mom, where are y'all from?
Rutgersville.
Rutgersville? Where's Rutgersville?
It is about 10 miles north of Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm. I see. So you're not far at all?
Not far at all.
That's great. Have you been here before?
No, I haven't.
You live 20 miles away and you've never been here before. Well, I'm glad you're here now. You having a good time?
We are. We are.
This is a beautiful place, isn't it?
It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And you have a good day.
After I spoke with young Ireland and her mom, I thought I was finished and I started walking away, but then Ireland called me back. It seemed she wanted to interview me.
Do you want to come to a tea party?
Do I want to come to a tea party? Sure. We're going to do a tea party now?
Yes.
Okay, where are we going to go?
There.
Right over here? Okay, I'm coming with you. Let's go.
And where are you from?
Where am I from? I'm from Michigan. I'm from Detroit.
Okay.
That's a long way away. It's not nearly as pretty as here. But then very few places are.
Someday I'll be six and I'll get a pet.
Someday you'll be six and you'll get a pet?
Yeah.
That's tremendous. Who told you that?
Mom.
Well, Mom did.
Dad.
Mom and Dad said you're going to be six and get a pet. Okay, well, I'm so very pleased.
I actually stuck around for a few minutes with Ireland. We had ourselves quite a tea party. But next, I was called over by young Benjamin. It seems he'd found something very interesting down there in Montpelier's basement.
Ben is a freshman at UVA and a young man, obviously, and yet he's finding the kitchen down here really interesting. And what did you just come across you wanted to share with me, Ben?
Well, I thought this display was very interesting, talking about James Madison and his views towards slavery.
Okay.
So, apparently James Madison had a slave named Billy, whom he took with him to the Constitutional Convention.
I didn't know that.
Well, the thing is, being in, you know, Philadelphia during this time, Billy got ideas that, you know, slaves should be free like any other man. And so James Madison was faced with a dilemma. He could either try and take Billy forcibly back with him to Virginia or let him go. And he decided upon a compromise. He sold Billy in Pennsylvania for less than his worth, where he knew Billy would be free in 7 years. And I thought the episode was interesting in that it encompassed the dilemma faced by a lot of founding fathers from the South, where they proclaimed liberty but yet themselves had slaves.
Oh, yeah.
So James Madison himself said, I do not expect to get the near worth of him, but cannot think of punishing him merely for coveting that liberty for which we have paid the price of so much blood.
Yeah, what a horrible contradiction that was for slave owners, and what a difficult position to put them in. And it's not just the general issue of slavery, but it's the specific issue of slave owners taking their slaves into free states.
Yeah, it's not an abstract issue for these people. It's a very personal issue. They know the slaves themselves. And it must have been a, you know, severe moral dilemma for most of them.
Oh, absolutely. And there are many stories about slave owners taking their slaves north with them, and then the slaves getting ideas, as you say, and running off. And some of them tried actively to get them back. Madison seemed to have come up with, if not a unique solution, certainly a, you know, very interesting one. But this was an issue that would remain all the way to the Civil War. And it led, of course, to the adoption of the Fugitive Slave Clause. And it's one reason why many people say that the Civil War was not at all about states' rights. It was about the opposite of states' rights, because states like Pennsylvania would say, we have a right to be free in our state, and if you bring your slave here, your slave becomes free. And then the Southerners, of course, said, no, that's not what happens. You know, when a slave remains a slave. So this was an issue. This little story that you've come across here in Dolly Madison's kitchen is a huge story that had huge implications all the way up to the Civil War.
Well, not just to the Civil War, but more immediately, it led to the creation of a new capital. Because the Southerners didn't want to keep having their slaves taken to the North, so that's why we have our fine city of Washington, D.C.
One of the main reasons the Southerners wanted a southern capital, absolutely. Well, thank you, Ben Harris.
Well, now it was time for some fresh air, and besides, I was still intrigued by those Enlightenment girls I'd spoken to earlier, so I decided maybe I'd go look and see if I could talk to some more of them.
I'm here with three lovely ladies in what looked to be like, and I'm looking at strands of sunlight coming through the clouds, and with three lovely ladies in Enlightenment-era dress, beautiful long dresses, and one of them has a straw hat, and we have a straw basket. And who are you, and why are you here?
We are with a group called Project Enlightenment, and there's also a class at McLean High School called Living History. And we do historical reenactment all throughout Virginia We go to Williamsburg, we go to Old Town Alexandria, we go to Mount Vernon for the 3 days of our Memorial Day weekend. And so each of us basically studies a character. For instance, I'm Maria Martin, who is the assistant to James Audubon, and she was the one who drew all the plant life in behind his bird pictures.
Cool.
And so each of us has a character we study, or a certain time, a certain aspect of the time period, the 17th to the 18th centuries.
The science or the cosmetology of the time.
You and the science, too, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is not just about guns and political history.
Yeah, she's one of the scientists. Yes.
You're one of the scientists. Who are you?
I am Benjamin Franklin's daughter, Sarah Franklin Bache.
I see.
Yes, so I learned all about the electrical sciences that my father was doing, including electricity and lightning bolts and...
What is a Leyden jar?
A Leyden jar is the type of battery that was used during the time period. Basically what it is it has a magnetic chain in a glass bottle that's usually tinted so it lasts longer with a cork on top. The cork connects to the metal chain, and it has a metal foil that goes around the bottle, and it's usually filled up with some sort of liquid, usually water. Basically what you do is you power up this battery through electricity, and then it stores that charge until you use it on some other equipment.
That is the best description of a Leyden jar I've ever heard, and now I believe you that you've actually studied Benjamin Franklin and his daughter.
Thank you.
And their technological achievements. They were remarkable people, weren't they?
Yes, they were. They were very interesting.
So this is sort of an Enlightenment history club or history class.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're both club and class.
Both club and class.
Yeah, you two are both in the class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have time in my schedule to be in class, so I'm just in the club.
Well, this is a remarkable class and club. I don't think I've ever heard of one that is specifically oriented toward the Enlightenment.
Well, yeah.
We're the only one like it in actually the nation.
Yeah.
Who is in charge of this? Who sponsors
this? Our sponsor is actually a physics teacher. His name is Dean Howarth. He's actually, if you've seen a man, an older gentleman, walking around in a maroon vest. Well, he's not that old looking, but he's white.
He's an old guy. Okay.
Yeah,
so he's like,
really.
Does he look as old as I do?
Yeah.
Not quite?
No.
Okay. So he's a real old guy that doesn't look quite as old as I do.
And he knows everything.
Here's a hint, ladies and gentlemen. Never ask high school students to define old.
Because he's probably old 45.
Their description will include you. Yes, okay.
You look great for your age.
You don't know your age, though.
Oh, man, this is just getting worse and worse. My son, Ben, is over there. He's a freshman, a first year at UVA, and he is enjoying this interview so immensely. Okay, so the old guy is standing here talking to you, and you're talking to me about this stuff. The Enlightenment is such an important historical period, and indeed it's the period in history that gave birth to our Constitution, gave birth to many of the theories, the political theories that were later embodied in the Constitution, separation of powers, individual rights, all that sort of stuff. And it's so often overlooked in our historical studies, so I'm so pleased. And I was about to say that it's strange to have a physics professor or physics teacher sponsoring this, and then as soon as that thought occurred to me, I thought, no, it's not.
No.
No, yeah. I mean, this was a huge era in the flourishing of science. The modern scientific method was honed, if not invented, during that time.
And the way he teaches his physics, he uses the history of what happened then to make his physics in class more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, this sounds fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
The Enlightenment, it's probably my favorite historical era.
It's a lot of fun.
It's fantastic. All of the kids love doing it. It's all self-study, and normally we have about 30 to 40 kids in the group each year,
right.
And it's only for juniors and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that kids just keep coming in and wanting to learn about it is interesting because it's all on us. We have to learn all the information ourselves. And Mr. Howarth will give us places to go, and he'll say, hey, there's this interesting occasion down at Claudemore Farms. It's a market fair. You should go talk to some of the people there, see what you can find out. And we carry these things called commonplace books, and they're sort of what he calls our cheat sheets for the Enlightenment period. And we just write down quotes and things that we find interesting, and then we share them with the class. So we all educate each other, and we educate ourselves, and the main purpose is so we can go out and enlighten the general public about what this time period was about.
It's a lot of self-motivation, which I still have to push myself to do.
Because always a problem.
I kind of play any woman, and then my specific character is Abigail Adams.
Ah,
but I have to do much more research on her because I know very little as of yet.
Important woman, very important woman.
Very important woman, very powerful woman.
Yes, indeed she was. Indeed she was. Well, what are your names again?
Ellen Knapp.
You're Ellen.
Mary Rose Daniels.
Mary Rose Daniels.
And my name is Sarah Corey.
Sarah Corey, and you're all from McLean High School, right?
Yes.
Exactly, McLean, Northern Virginia, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a remarkable thing, and I certainly applaud you. And your teacher's name again is?
Mr. Dean Howarth.
Mr. Dean Howarth, and he's an old guy in a maroon coat.
I beg to differ. I feel he's younger than my parents.
Okay, he's younger than your parents, but kind of an old guy. Okay, and
he's
not
30, but I feel like he's probably only like 45 or something.
Well, I will look for him.
He's been teaching for 26 years.
Yeah, he's a lot older than you now.
Oh, my God. He must be at least 47 then. At least. My gosh.
I mean, he looks fantastic then.
Practically dead. Okay. Oh, thank you, ladies. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It's your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm at a celebration, a festival for Constitution Day 2012. It's late summer at Montpelier. It's a gorgeous day, and we're just going to walk around together. You, me, my son Ben, let's have a party.
There's a party going on right here, a celebration to last throughout the years. So bring your good times and your laughter too. We gon' celebrate your party with you. Come on now.
Celebration.
Let's all celebrate and have a good time.
Celebration.
We gon'
The next place we went after we left the garden was the front lawn. And on the front lawn, we saw a bunch of people playing games. All right. I'm here in the front lawn of Montpelier, Constitution Day 2012. I am with Melissa Smets.
Sarah Rogers.
And Sarah Rogers as well. And they're going to tell me about these old-timey games that people are playing here in the front lawn. Tell me about it.
Well, we have one game going on. It's called the Game of Graces. And it was actually to teach young girls how to be graceful. So you have two sticks. One person has two sticks. Another one has another two with a hoop. And you basically just toss it very gracefully back and forth to each other. And you're supposed to stand in the place and not move around a lot, but that usually doesn't happen.
I see. And so it's not as graceful as perhaps it was intended to be.
Especially
when boys play it.
Yeah, when boys play it, it's not graceful at all.
I see.
And then we have a hoops game that you run behind and basically hit the hoop with a small little stick.
Right.
I don't know what that game's called.
Yeah. Hoops, perhaps?
It's a large hoop. They would have been from barrel hoops, and that's where they would have gotten them from.
Looks like a hula hoop.
Go on the outside of a barrel.
Right.
And you essentially just run behind it, hit it with a stick, and try to keep it going for as long as possible. Kind of looks like a large hula hoop.
And I see, yes, I actually see one girl, about 8 years old, she is using it as a hula hoop.
Yes, a lot of people think they are hula hoops.
Well, you know, hey, whatever they do, right?
Yep.
Whatever's cool. We don't know what they did with them in the 18th century.
Nope. They might have done hula hooping. Who knows?
Another game we've got is darts. Only the darts are made out of corn cobs with a feather stuck in the one end, and we're shooting into a target on the ground. And that was a very common. It actually started out as an Indian game, and then it became a colonial game.
I hope they're not sharp or anything.
No.
So we don't actually puncture any heads.
That's one of the nice things is they're very soft and.
Very good.
Yeah, good for young children.
Glad to hear it. Well, I had lawn darts when I was a kid, and I always thought to myself, someone's gonna die. And apparently a few people did. That's why you don't see lawn darts anymore. Yeah, so.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Makes sense, absolutely. Cool, anything else going on here you want to talk about?
Nothing much.
No. The last game we've got is potato sacks, which
potato
are pretty self-explanatory.
Potato sack race.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sack race.
Sack race. Okay.
Exceptionally hilarious to watch.
Exceptionally.
Oh yeah. Especially when the adults get in it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I was just thinking it would be very funny if I were to do it, and so I'm not going to do it.
Darn it.
Okay. Next time, perhaps.
Yes,
miss out. All right, thanks, ladies.
You're welcome.
After we finished playing games, I saw something that warmed my heart. I saw a couple of young boys, each of them wearing a colonial tri-cornered hat. And it reminded me so much of my own experience as a boy and of my own two boys when they were much younger.
What's your name, young man?
Sammy.
Sam?
Sammy.
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 Okay, tremendous. What's your name, young fellow?
Angel.
Andrew,
tremendous. Now, I notice you both have tri-corner hats on. Where did you get those?
At Williamsburg.
Yeah! At Williamsburg, absolutely. Do you like going to historical places?
Yeah!
And he got some sticks and some drums.
You got some
and
sticks and some drums?
Hats.
And the hats. Okay,
that's
great. Now, you've been in Montpelier today. Are you having a good time?
Yeah, both at Williamsburg. Yeah.
At Williamsburg, absolutely.
Oh, stick buck.
Sam, don't do that.
A stink bug, you gotta get that. Do your mom and dad take you?
Don't get him.
You can't compete. You cannot compete with a stink bug, yeah. Mom. You cannot compete with it. Do you all go to a lot of historical sites?
We do.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we do.
Where all have you been, if I may ask?
Monticello, Williamsburg,
Poplar Forest.
You've been to Poplar Forest as well? Cool.
I think what else we've been to? We've been to Woodrow Wilson's place.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In Stanton?
Mm-hmm.
I've never been there. Is that a nice place?
It is.
It's a neat little town. Neat little town.
I've been to Stanton. I've not been to Woodrow Wilson's place.
Uh-huh. The presidential library there? It's a large home, but there's a lot of neat things in it. So it's got the presidential limousine and a few other things. So
very nice.
Cool.
And the Red Hill. Patrick Henry's place.
Patrick Henry's home, right? So, what's your favorite historical site you've taken the kids to so far?
Oh boy.
What have the kids enjoyed the most?
They really enjoyed Williamsburg.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I can really put a favorite, but that was a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Really, yeah. I spent many happy hours there when I was a child. In fact,
yeah.
That's what attracted me to you all, as I saw your hats and I remembered wearing them myself. I remembered my own boys wearing them at various times.
Yeah.
Okay, and they're obviously
we're kind of at the end of our day here, so,
all
so
right.
They're a little.
Well, thank you for talking to me.
But
okay.
Yeah, they've had a good time here, so.
Tremendous, thanks. And what was your name, if I may ask?
Jennifer.
And Steve.
Steve, that's tremendous. Where are you all from?
Originally from Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in Salem, Virginia right now.
So not too far.
Nope.
All right.
So we're taking advantage of.
Well, I'm glad you're here at Montpelier, and I hope you're enjoying Constitution Day.
Thank you.
Then it was time for a swing by the slave quarters. The houses of the slaves were right next to the mansion at Montpelier, and though they've not been reconstructed, at least not yet, the outlines are there, and I happened to cross three students from James Madison University.
Could you tell me your name?
Lizzie Parker.
Derek Engel.
Ashanti Wright. And where are you all from?
JMU.
JMU, so you're college students?
Yes.
So what year are you?
Freshman.
Sophomore.
I see, a freshman and a couple of sophomores. So what brings you to Montpelier on Constitution Day?
It was a free trip, sponsored by James Madison.
Yes. So JMU sent you out here. Well, I guess that's appropriate, you know, given where you're going to school. So what do you think? I noticed you're standing here in the slave quarters reading about the slave community. What do you think about the fact that our founders had slaves and that they did all the heavy lifting and all the hard work?
I don't find it very unusual since it was during that time period, but it's kind of sad that Paul Jennings worked with them so long and then he got sold when they ran out of money. So.
Yeah, Paul Jennings was James Madison's valet for many years. Exactly right, yeah. So were you just reading about him?
Yes.
Yeah, that was sort of sad. Well, the whole institution of slavery is sad, I suppose. What do you think of it?
I mean, understand that that is how they lived. It was how everyone of any gentleman in Virginia or anywhere in the South, they all had slaves like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess their primary concern was everyone else in the country.
Yeah.
Their slaves were there and probably respected, at least for the men servant and the lady's maid.
Mm-hmm.
But they were still slaves.
Yeah, pretty rough institution. What's your reaction?
I agree with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little, it's not surprising
mm-hmm.
that they have slaves because he is a man of power and he is
right.
a man.
of great need, obviously, because mm-hmm. he has this power.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a little disheartening to think that a founder of our country has slaves.
Yeah.
But at least
one of the father of the Constitution is a slave owner. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's quite a contradiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Any other thoughts on that?
I would say at least he didn't treat them poorly.
Well, do we know that?
We don't know that, but we can hope.
We can hope.
Right?
We can certainly hope he didn't treat them, other than owning them, I guess. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's the original constitutional sin in our country, and the one that we weren't able to resolve until, we had a war over it. So, fascinating topic. Anything else before I conclude? No? No other thoughts? Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And finally, it seems that the mystery was solved, because all those Enlightenment folks I'd been seeing, they'd all been telling me about this mysterious man in a maroon vest, and finally, I found him. I've been hearing about this mystery man in the maroon vest all day long. Tell us who you are and what you're doing here today, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Dean Howarth.
Mm-hmm.
I am from McLean High School outside of Washington, D.C.
Right.
And we are very lucky enough to be invited each year to Constitution Day to sort of be special guest docents. Because the students that attend belong to a living history program at our school that's been in existence now since the early 90s.
Wow. Now, before we go any further, what do you teach at McLean High School?
Well, you would think that I'm a history teacher, but
that would be my first thought, yes.
Curiously, I am a 26-year veteran physics teacher.
Well, you know, the funny thing, one of your students mentioned that to me, and my first thought was physics, and then almost instantaneously I thought, physics, enlightenment, science, makes sense.
Perfect connection.
Absolutely.
And since science was so much the cornerstone of the Age of Enlightenment, that it's a natural mix. And even though my stock in trade is science, and I'll do demonstrations on astronomy and physics and acoustics and natural science or what have you, we also have a very broad collection. So you saw the students demonstrating the military militia, or
right.
social games and pastimes of the time period, and the ladies who were singing.
Right.
And we have statesmen, we have artists, we have dancers, we have musicians. So
see,
it's
that's
very
what
broad.
Really struck me, is that I'm accustomed to seeing reenactors in military garb, and that's fine, and
mm-hmm.
it's important history and all the rest of it, but the idea that you're going to take a period of history and portray other aspects of it.
Absolutely.
Is fascinating, and I dare say almost unique, especially at the high school level. How did this come about?
Actually, it was a group of several teachers back in 93 or so. We all worked together at McLean, and the Corcoran Gallery of Art was refurbishing an 18th century French salon
mm-hmm.
that they were putting into the building and regilding, and they wanted to do some sort of outreach because museums are want to work with schools. I mean, it's part of their mission. So they came to us, and I'm in some circuitous manner, and we had the idea of, like, well, it is a French salon, why don't we recreate a French salon and have people wander in and hear what it would be like to overhear Voltaire talking to Madame du Barry or something, or hear about Lavoisier's greatest discoveries, all in a sort of authentic way that sort of brought it to life. Because, you know, a room can be an empty room, and a book can be sort of impersonal, but when it comes to life, there's strength in living history. So we sort of did this. We thought it would be a one-off sort of experience, and other museums found out about us, and we've been invited. We've been working at Mount Vernon Estate in Alexandria for 16 years, I believe, now. We do Memorial Day events down there, and we've expanded to historic Alexandria, and every year we add more and more historic sites and museums and schools to our repertoire, and it's part of the community service, obviously, which is important for young people, but more importantly, we're helping them serve their mission of teaching the public.
Right.
And I think as a teacher, you really know your students know their stuff when they're able to teach it to someone else.
Oh, that's always been my standard.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I don't feel I really understand something unless I can explain it to somebody else. And so I'm going to go back 30 years
mm-hmm.
ago. This is high school physics. I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
P equals MV.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Alrighty, I remember it. After that, yes. Al Gibson, my physics teacher, this one's for you. I remember the formula. Absolutely marvelous. Now, the physics and the Enlightenment, so important together. Tell me, your students mentioned that you teach your physics classes from the perspective of the history of science.
Absolutely.
And tell me about that.
And you know, as a physics teacher, everybody's probably got a scary physics story. And you know, when you introduce yourself as a physics teacher at a party or something, some people think it's like a vampire walked in the room.
But, conversation stopper.
Right. And for understandable reason, because it can be a very esoteric and confusing situation. So if you could do anything to humanize what could be, and naturally is, difficult to understand, you have an inside track on getting people at least invested enough to hear you out.
Right.
And when they realize that there's a human drama behind, you know, why did Isaac Newton bother to do this? Or why did Copernicus publish his papers when he did? It adds a little human drama to it. And what are the things in life that we remember the most? Those dramatic moments that actually stir the heart as well as the mind. And that naturally for me, I mean, I incorporated that in my class on a regular basis, but this is sort of the complete manifestation of that, where we can actually take all of these things that seem like they're dusty episodes in history. And the big thing, and what we teach in class, is the idea, of course, the past was very different from now. And a living history program, I mean, that's easy to show someone, oh, well, this is how a gun worked back then, or this is how we had to keep our food cool back then.
Mm-hmm.
But the truly important aspect of it is they realize there's a lot the same today as there was back then.
Sure.
And when you can...
Human nature hasn't changed in 200
absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely. And, I mean, the people were just as smart, and they were just as confused by things or just as curious about things as we are today. They endeavored to find answers to those questions. And there's much more that is the same, and that's, I think, where the true lessons lie in history, is how those people were the same as us today, and how some of their issues still resonate today.
Indeed, they do. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because, of course, the Enlightenment was the intellectual ground up in which the Constitution took root.
Absolutely. It's a complete Enlightenment document.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think people often tend to forget that. I mean, the Enlightenment was all about rationality. The Enlightenment was all about new ideas, new methods. And that's what our Constitution is, and people tend to forget that context. And it's extraordinarily important, because people like James Madison, people like Thomas Jefferson, many of the founders were so well grounded in those ideas that they were giving them life by creating that Constitution.
Absolutely, and they were talking, and we were just, you know, I always mention when I go inside of Montpelier and you see that episode where there's the ink stain on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
When James Madison was here studying and preparing for the Constitutional Convention, he accidentally spilled a bottle of ink on the floor, and then later on, preservationists found the ink stain.
Found the very ink stain.
And then you think that, like, you know, that ink was there. That was part of the process that made the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
And while he was sitting up in his study, I mean, our Constitution just didn't come out of nowhere. It's mm-hmm. not like Americans just invented it. I mean, James Madison studied Republican government that went all the way back to ancient Greek times, and
right.
the Panhellenic Council, and these strange little republics that were founded in Scandinavia. So he was using lessons from the past to make a document that would lead us to the future. And I think that's the essence of history right there. I mean, it's the reason why we bother to study it. And when I see a young person today saying, oh, history's boring, how could you possibly say that? Because it's the one field that everything has a history. I mean, and that's kind of what interweaves it into every discipline. There's a history of computer science, as well as there's a history of physics.
There's a history of everything. Exactly.
And it's the true indispensable study, I think. And, you know, these kids kind of realize this. We've studied, you know, what Mr. Madison did here, and they realize that it just didn't happen this way. And a lot of people tend to think that American history is, you know, well, of course we won the war. You know, we were good guys. And they don't realize that,
right.
you know, if George Washington got captured at Brandywine, he would have been hung or hanged. And
he was on the short list.
Yeah, and they actually like wrote contingency plans to Martha, saying like, this is where you'll go hide in the woods if I'm captured, because we'll be traitors. And people don't realize that it wasn't this sort of preordained that, you know, America's the greatest country in the world because it just happened that way. America's the greatest country in the world because a lot of people learned a lot of lessons and tried very hard to put them into play and guided by the spirit of reason above all. And that's the reason why, you know, we call our group Project Enlightenment.
Well said, sir.
Thank you very much.
Well said,
indeed.
Thank you very much. Thank you for talking to us today.
My great appreciation.
And that's our show, Constitution Day 2012 at Montpelier. Wasn't that a blast? Our distribution engineers are Bob Hoffman and Larry Mayer. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. My name is Stuart Harris. And remember, it's your Constitution, and you need to learn about it.